The Hawk is on the air, broadcasting 24/7 from the top of the Niagara Escarpment.
Hey, listeners. Thanks for spending time with me again tonight. I hope the weather's great where you are, and I hope that you've done something nice for yourself today. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Lucky Sticks, or Dejon Hamilton. He's a Hamilton-based Afropop musician, public speaker, podcaster, music educator, and health and wellness connector at Refuge Hamilton. You can find Lucky Sticks, and that is Sticks with a Z at the end, not an S, on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, and all streaming services under himself. So, thanks so much for joining me.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime. I guess, like, as a beginner question, just in case, like, nobody or some people aren't very familiar with you, how would you describe your style as a musician?
Great question. My style as a musician, I have recently coined as Afropop.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up listening to soca, grew up listening to reggae, dancehall, R&B, 90s R&B, all of those things, a little bit of hip-hop stuff. When I think about the type of music that I make today, it's definitely a fusion of all of those sounds, and definitely along the Afro-pop vibe. So that's how I would describe my sound at this point, at least.
Yeah, for sure. I know that you're a singer-songwriter. Do you play instruments yourself?
Yes, so I play steel pan, drum set, and then I dabble amongst the other instruments, bass guitar, keys, but my main instruments that I actually perform on would be steel pan and or drum set.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been playing those?
Wow, I stopped counting at this point, to be honest with you. But I definitely have been playing over 10 years, probably 15 at this point now.
Yeah. Do you remember when you picked up your first instrument?
I was 8. Yeah, I believe I was 8 years old. I remember, I think it was like grade 4, grade 3, around there. And we used to, we being my mom and I, we used to pass by a music store in Hamilton. It's no longer a music store anymore. It was called Payne's Music. And they always used to have the drum sets and the newest instruments in the display window. And as a special treat, because we couldn't afford a drum set at the time because instruments were just way out of our budget, as a treat, sometimes my mom would allow me to go into the store and they would allow us to play on their demo kits that they had out on the floor. So that would be my little treat here now and again. And besides that, I would be able to play sometimes after church. So
yeah,
we did that until I was able to finally raise a little bit of funds, do some savings and the little piggy bank and all of those different things to finally get the coins together to be able to purchase my first drum set, personal drum set.
Yeah, sweet. Would you say that you grew up in a musical family?
Definitely. My family is artistic. My brother, one of my brothers is a saxophone player. He plays saxophone, I should say. And one of my sisters, or two of my sisters actually, they can sing. And besides the musical side of things, we also have some visual artists. One of my brothers is also the same one that plays the saxophone. He's also a barber, and he can do some amazing designs in people's hair. Like, he's been able to actually draw Obama in people's hair using his clippers. So we definitely grew up in a musical family, artistic family. I was the only one that pursued music at this level, but I definitely was influenced by my elder siblings who have all dabbled in music at some point in some time.
Yeah, for sure. Who are your biggest musical influences?
It's always a really hard question because I feel like I'm just a lover of music. I'm a lover of musicians. Who are my biggest? I don't want to leave anybody out. That's what it is. But I can definitely name a few.
Of course.
And I guess across the many different genres. Growing up, I definitely used to watch, let's say in the pop category, definitely the Michael Jacksons. In the R&B category, I grew up watching, the Ushers of the world. Even in the neo soul, hearing some of the D'Angelo's, and in the reggae world, it would be like Bob Marley and artists like Carlos Riley and those few. Stevie Wonder as well was also another great in the music collection. Like I said, I'm sure I'm missing out so many great ones, but those are the ones that are coming to the top of my head at the moment. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you say that you take away from those artists?
I'm a music nerd when it comes to performance. I love to watch people perform. I love to watch how they engage with the audience. I love how they engage with their band. And I love to see how they create atmospheres that when people watch them or come to their shows, people are taken away or, get sucked into a world that they create with their audience for the hour, hour and a half, however long the concert might be. So from all of those artists, I definitely take away their performance abilities in a live setting and see, what's some point is that I can take from them that I can definitely apply to my own artistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. When would you say that you first discovered music?
Wow, that's a good question. I would even say, when did music discover me?
Yeah.
It feels like that,
Sure.
I think music has always been a part of me. It has always chosen me, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as I can know myself and as long as I can remember myself and listening to even stories that my mom would share, my aunts would share, they all tell of me always being interested in music, whether it's through me dancing to music when I was a toddler or me making a whole bunch of noise, beating on things around the house, or they would buy fake Fisher-Price instruments for me or fake microphones for me to be able to sing in and, just be creative. So I've always shown an interest in music ever since I've known myself and even before I can even remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you first started actually like playing, writing, or like singing?
So I first started playing, like I said, that would have been... That's a really good question. I first started playing because I played before I even had a drum set because mm-hmm. I was able to play at church and such. So I don't remember when I first started playing like I said, I feel like I've always been playing something.
Right.
But I definitely first started writing 2012. That was the first real official song. I used to write, now that I think about it, I used to write small little hooks and such back in the day, actually elementary school, and that was my little early childhood to pick up lines. You know, some kids might be practicing, you know, how to flirt. My flirtatious vibes or lessons were in writing a nice, cute little song for little schoolgirl crushes and and trying to win them over with my words. So officially, though, I started to take songwriting more seriously 2012. I was in my first year at Berklee College of Music, and I got the bravery to decide to try my hand at actually writing a real song and recording it and starting the process of becoming an artist.
Yeah, for sure. Do you remember the first song that you ever wrote?
So the first entire song that I wrote was actually on my EP in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Love You From the Distance.
Mm.
And I wrote that in my bedroom, in my dorm. And I ended up connecting with a classmate who took me to a studio in a basement not too far where I lived, and ended up collaborating with some awesome people. There was actually this young producer who was there, and apparently it turned out that his dad was a guy named Jerry Wanda. And Jerry Wanda is actually the producer, and I think he's actually related to Wyclef Jean, and he did a lot of work with the Fugees. So
cool.
Yeah, it was really cool to make that small little connection through his son.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally, yeah. What are the major ways that your music has changed since you first started writing to now?
My music has definitely, I think, matured. My songwriting abilities have been advanced in certain ways. I think ideas and concepts come to me in smoother ways and a little bit quicker. And it doesn't take me too long, actually, to be able to write a song. Thankfully, I haven't had any writer's block yet. And hopefully it doesn't come anytime soon. But I think definitely my writing has been able to, yeah, you know, be brought up a notch since I first started writing. And I think I'm more confident and grounded in what I want to say, the type of artist I want to continue to be, and the type of subject matter that I want to speak about, and finding interesting ways to be able to communicate messages that have been communicated many times over, but perhaps what's a different angle that we can say something that's already been said and put a twist onto it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid and what kind of music was around in your house? And what has changed since then? And have you brought some of those early influences into your current day music?
Definitely grew up in a Christian household. So we listened to a lot of gospel music, mostly from the States, but a lot of Kirk Franklin. Like I said, I would also hear playing from my sister's stereo system. I would hear a lot of 90s R&B, some Missy Elliott she used to play. There's this artist called Tweet. I remember she had all these CDs, Jagged Edge, Boyz II Men, all of those artists. So I would hear a lot of that. She also used to watch a lot of BET. My sister's 8 years older than me. So her influence is definitely what she was listening to and what was being played in the house was seeping definitely into my subconscious. So she listened to a lot of BET and she'd watch all the music videos. Literally, I think it would be like Saturdays and she would spend hours just watching BET music videos. Chris Brown was playing at those times and all of those types of artists.
Mm-hmm.
And then besides those genres, and like I said, there was reggae sometimes would play, or I would hear soca. My family is Trinidadian and Jamaican, so I'd have both of those musical backgrounds. If I go to a family function or a barbecue, or just playing it in the house while cleaning, when on a, you know, on the side of the morning or something like that. a mixture of definitely urban music in whatever genre that would be playing in the house or at an event.
Yeah. And do those influences, do they impact the music that you create, or do you still listen to those types of influences today?
Yeah, I definitely still listen to those influences today, and I would say that they definitely impact the music that I produce today, the music that I write today.
Mm-hmm.
There will definitely be lots of nuances of gospel, lots of nuances of R&B, reggae, all of those genres.
Yeah. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
Wow. Music, again, it's always been my life. It's never just been a hobby. I always say if I wasn't doing music, and I do other things, of course, but music is definitely where my heart resides. I just happen to have, I think, other abilities and talents and stuff, but definitely music is the main thing for me. It's always been my main focus. And yeah, I don't think it was ever a hobby for me. It was definitely always something that I saw as a gateway as well to be able to improve my life and improve my family's life. And I took it seriously from a very young age all the way up to now.
Yeah, I can tell. So you mentioned that you attended Berklee. So what program did you go into, and how was that experience?
Yeah, I attended Berklee College of Music and graduated with a degree in music business management. I was and still am the only Canadian steel pan player to enter the school. When it was time to audition, I could have auditioned on drums, or I could have even auditioned on vocals, but I decided that because they were offering steel pan as a principal instrument for the first time in the school's history when I was entering, that was back in 2012, I decided that there was no other school that was offering that, and one, it might give me a competitive edge, but two, it would be interesting to use this instrument that in the beginning I actually didn't want to play. I joined a group called the Hamilton Youth Orchestra as their drummer. It was a entire youth steel band, and I was the drum set player. And by being there and being around the steel pans, I used to fool around on the instruments when we would have quick little rehearsal breaks. And from fooling around on the instrument, I got inducted into becoming a player on the instrument because I was picking up the music really quickly. So in the beginning, I didn't even really want to play the steel pan, but it took me all the way to having an opportunity to apply and audition at Berklee, and I thought to myself, okay, well, let's give this a go. Let's give this a try. So I auditioned, got in, studied. I loved the business, and I loved being able to mix the arts with business. So I took their music business management program, and that experience was incredible. It was like a mixture of, in the first 2 years was more artistic, and then the last 2 years was more business. But while being there, I took advantage of all the many different opportunities and things there. One of the major things that you get from being at Berklee is definitely a worldwide network of musicians that's a little bit harder to foster and build by just reaching out to people online or stuff like that. So that was one of the major keys, and just many different performance opportunities and opportunities to just connect with people from all around the world at the school. So I had an amazing time there, and I'm still a Berklee alumni ambassador. So when they have auditions and they travel for the auditions, they come to Toronto, I help them out with the auditions. I help out with some of the adjudicating and seeking out for some of the new Berklee talent that's coming out of the Toronto GTHA Canada region, whoever traveled to Toronto to do the auditions as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a part of that process.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. The fact that you're the only steel drum player, that's incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did you ever take besides Berklee, did you ever take like professional lessons, whether that's on an instrument, whether that's vocals, anything like that?
Lessons, I took a few drum lessons at Payne's Music. I think it was 4 drum lessons at Payne's Music. A lot of my lessons have definitely been self-taught or taught through the environment of growing up in the church. Before I went to Berklee, I also attended Mohawk College for a year, and I took their prep music program. Mm-hmm. But besides that, nope, there wasn't much actual formal lessons or formal training. It was more of a kind of learn as you go and self-teach myself, and joining things like my high school bands to be able to get experience. Just playing, you know, the more that you play is definitely the better that you get, because you're constantly practicing, you're constantly working on your craft. And in lieu of that, it was really important for me once I got to Berklee and once I got to certain places in my own journey to be able to give back to my community through camps and through a program that I started called Musicapalooza, where we offer and provide access and opportunities for youth, whether they have prior knowledge in music or whether they've been playing before, to attend a 2-week camp. We've been doing it virtually because of COVID for the past 2 years now. We just actually finished today. Today was the last day. I don't know when this will air, but Friday, July 9th was the last day.
That was the last day, yeah.
of this camp. So, so definitely didn't take any formal training, but wanted to be able to give opportunities for at-risk youth or for any youth who perhaps wouldn't have been able to afford to learn, because music lessons can be expensive, instruments can be expensive. So took a bit of my own experience to be able to give back and give some other youth experiences that I might not have had at my age.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And good on you for, you know, teaching yourself so much, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So you just mentioned that you were part of some high school bands. Do you remember when you joined your first band or started performing as like a solo act?
So my first band experience was with the Hamilton Youth Orchestra. I was in grade 6 when I joined them, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that was my first performance experience. We went all over. I think the first performance I had with them was actually at Queen's Park in Toronto. And we did something for, I think it was a Canada Day celebration. So I definitely got a lot of band performance experience through the Hamilton Youth Orchestra. My first solo performance, it's interesting actually, because my first solo performance as Lucky Six, I would have said officially would have been 2016. Mm-hmm. But before that point, I've been performing, especially on the steel pan. It's a popular instrument for weddings that want certain, you know, summer vibes or Caribbean vibes or whatever. So I used to do a lot of wedding gigs. I started doing this with my brother very, very early as a teenager in high school. But officially, as like Lucky Stick solo artist, performing artist, it was 2016. That was the first performance that sounded music in Burlington.
Mm-hmm. So Lucky Sticks, that's sort of the first time that you took on like a solo act?
Yeah, I've always been Lucky Sticks. I've always carried that name since middle school. Mm-hmm. But the first time I performed under Lucky Sticks was, you know, Lucky Sticks being on the bill, Lucky Sticks being on the, you know, the center stage, with my own music and all those different things was 2016.
Right, right. And what does the name Lucky Sticks mean?
Good question. So Lucky Sticks is from two childhood nicknames, Lucky. I was called Lucky from the age of 2.5 or 3 after my family misplaced me at Canada's Wonderland. It's a longer story, but basically the long and short of it is that they found me, thankfully. Whew. And I was nicknamed Lucky from that point on. So all of the old school OGs, and even some of the new school, because I introduced myself to some people as Lucky still, they would know me, and they would know a bit of the backstory of how or where the name Lucky came from. And then Styx was also another nickname because I was a drummer, I was a percussionist, so I just put the two of them together, Lucky Styx, and that's how that was born.
Yeah, well, it suits you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So besides your musical career, you also create regular YouTube videos, which includes uploading live performance videos, but you also have like lifestyle content, like skincare and hair care videos, to more like educational content, like your Unsung Hero series, or your Dear Me Letters from the Heart series, where you create video diaries to your future self. Why branch out into other areas of digital art?
Great question. It's all art to me. And as an artist, I don't believe in boxing ourselves into one category. You know, we as human beings are multifaceted people. We have so many different interests and so many things, so many passions that we care about. So me as an individual and Lucky Styx as an entire brand is, yes, but I'm an artist, I'm a musician, but I'm also... I love speaking. I love motivating. I also love, like you said, lifestyle stuff. I love taking care of, you know, my hair. If you see, you know, I have any long locks, and I love skincare and I love fashion. So all of those different things are definitely things that I love to share with people. I love history, and I love, you know, learning about history. So I think it's important for us as artists to not feel like we can only speak about one thing or be hyper-focused into one area, but definitely to share with our fans or share with our followers or whoever else, our supporters, share with them all the different areas of our life. You know, when you look at many other artists out there, they might have their music, which was their main thing that got them recognized, but they then come out with, you know, their own perfume line or their own clothing line or whatever it might be. So, again, just not boxing in our art and our creativity into only one area, but being able to be free and create and share those different artistic interests and passions that we have.
Mm-hmm. Seems like you like being a man of many hats.
Definitely.
Yeah. So specifically talking about your podcast, called Let Me Find Out How You Found Out, how do you know, Jordan, your co-host, and, what did you envision the podcast being originally?
Jordan, my co-host, is actually my niece. We are, I think, 6 or 7 months apart.
Mm-hmm.
So we grew up like brothers and sisters, but that is my biological niece. My brother's, first child.
Cool.
And what did I envision? I really wanted the podcast to be for the community, by the community, inviting different guests on and literally just opening it up for everybody and anybody who has learned something and figured something out. Like, I really am a big advocate for it. Like, everybody has a story. Everybody has something that we can learn from. Everybody has experiences that somebody else might not have had. You have experiences that I haven't had, and I want to learn from you. So what can you teach me? So the Let Me Find Out How You Found It is literally a platform to invite different guests on there to find out, like, how did you find out? How did you find out about journalism? Like, how did you find out about, you know, your love and your passion for writing? Teach me about that. So that's what I envisioned the podcast to be about, and I've been very happy and proud at what we've been able to do and the conversations we've been able to have thus far, and I look forward to more episodes and more seasons coming up very shortly.
Yeah, for sure. How long have you been creating that podcast?
So we are in we just finished our second season of the podcast. We started February of 2000 and 2020 or 2019. You know, something funny as a sidebar, as a side note, is that with the whole COVID and being locked down, I always have to add a year onto stuff because it was like 2020 was a blur. But I think I think we started in 2000 and because we were 2020. Yeah, we started in 2020.
Yeah.
February of 2020. Then the world shut down a month later.
Wow.
And then we went virtual.
Wow.
And then, yeah, we started a second season at the beginning of this year as well.
Yeah, good timing.
I know. Impeccable timing, eh?
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned being in Hamilton from a very young age. Did you grow up in the city?
Yes, born and raised in the Hammer.
Awesome. Why did you decide to stick around?
That's a very good question. So I definitely went away for 4 years. I went away to study in the States. I was in Boston, Massachusetts, and then I spent 4 months in Spain studying abroad. And then the original plan was to stay in the U.S. after school. Life just ended up bringing me back to Canada and to the Hammer. And I just kind of rolled with the flow of things. I rolled with punches. And yeah, here I am today, still in the Hammer, or based in the Hammer at least.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think is so special about Hamilton's music community?
I think there's definitely a lot of hidden gems in the music community. And when I was growing up, at least, Hamilton didn't get a lot of love. I think now, just based off of the geographical and even like the real estate market of how we have a lot more people coming from the Toronto areas living in Hamilton, but perhaps they're working in Toronto. It's giving Hamilton a little more exposure, perhaps, to the arts and the art scene that exists here. And just like the small little nuggets of the beauty in the city that people who are visiting perhaps didn't see. So definitely a lot of hidden gems, a lot of untapped talent that I think perhaps might be getting a little bit more support now to be able to hopefully get some more exposure into the music world and into the music scene here in Canada.
Who are some talented Hamiltonian artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
Wow, there's many, but definitely the ones that I personally know and have worked with. I've recently worked with Angela Nettesoul. She's a soul R&B artist, very beautiful voice. Definitely have to shout out my cousin, who's also, like I said, we come from a bit of a musical family, but he's a rapper. He goes by Junior Bevel. So I'll have to shout him out to get more exposure. I work with Julian Jones, another amazing artist, pop artist. Love her stuff. And I don't want to leave anybody out if I didn't shout you out, just because I don't love you. I don't remember at the moment, but definitely would shout those three artists out at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many. I mean, we can't fault you for forgetting anybody.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Juliana Jones, we've got a special treat for everyone listening tonight. Lucky Stix dropped a brand new single a couple weeks ago, and we're about to play it here right now for you. Strangers is a single by Lucky Stix featuring Juliana Jones about an ex-couple reminiscing on their broken relationship.
You can tell my life, yeah. Cause it's been quite some time since I heard from you. Don't wanna bother you, just hope you're fine. Cause it's still on my mind, even though we're through. I just wanna keep in touch. Is that asking for too much? I hope that we ain't holding grudges.
from strangers to lovers. Now we're lovers to strangers.
How did we get to where we are right now? I never thought we'd get this far. Only to build us up and break us down. I wish that I could see your heart. Is there still a piece of you that beats for me? I might be taking this too far.
Just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Lucky Styx, or Dijon Hamilton, an Afropop musician, community creative, and health and wellness connector. So we just got back from playing your single Strangers featuring Juliana Jones. When did you start working on that single?
Strangers was, I think, by the end of November, early December. End of November, early December, started to produce the track as I was working on the housewarming party EP. And from production to songwriting was very, very quick. I think it didn't take more than 2-3 days to get the track together. The whole project really was coming together pretty quickly, pretty swiftly. I'd say end of November, December.
Mm-hmm. What's the story behind the track?
The story behind the track, so I'm definitely writing it from a remembered place and perspective of a relationship ending and being in that weird limbo place of, even though maybe, you know, it was good that the relationship had ended, or you can see how the relationship needed to end, now go from having this individual who you confided in and who you spent so much time with and spoke to all the time, to now you're back to strangers. You don't hear from them, they don't hear from you, you're not on the same privileges to be talking all the time or texting all the time, if at all, or calling or anything like that. So I just thought about the concept of, wow, it's so crazy how you can meet people who perhaps you didn't know them before, and they were strangers to you at first, and then they become your everything for however long you guys are together. And then from being everything, from being lovers, if the relationship doesn't work out, you go back to completely being strangers. Maybe you don't even see them anymore. You don't hear from them, nothing at all. So the song was written from there, not necessarily to lament, but just observation and writing from that place of how you feel in that moment of, I miss this person. I know it's over,
perhaps I know it's good that it's over, but I want to reach back out, but I know that I shouldn't reach back out because it's over. But yeah, I just read it from that that perspective and that feeling during that breakup moment when it's fresh and you're tempted to call them back, or you're tempted to keep in touch, or you're tempted to want to hold on to some remnants of the relationship.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that on a lot of your singles, you include features from local artists. Is highlighting local talent something that's really important for you?
Definitely. I believe that we're stronger together than we are apart, and highlighting other local artists and being able to introduce them to perhaps my fan base and they introduce them to their fan base, we're able to grow together. So I'm a collaborative person. I'm a team builder type of individual. I love teamwork. And I believe that music is, you can't do it on your own. It definitely takes a team. Definitely takes a village. So Definitely collaborating with other local artists is super important to me.
You also have a music video for Strangers. How did you put that together, and who did you work with to create it?
Yeah, thank you. So the music video for Strangers was put together by Beyond Film and Photography, a media team that's based out of Toronto. And it was from downtown Toronto. And I went with a blank slate, and together, me and the director, along with some of my other friends and family members, we kind of hashed out different type of scenes and scenarios and storylines, and eventually we were able to settle on the storyline that you see in the movie video now, and then just bring it to life and just kind of give the vision to the director and say, okay, this is what we want. We want the first part of the movie video to be me and the lead lady, who's Jasmine Francis, to be, doing all the things that couples were doing, hanging out and just spending time together. And then the second half of the song, I want us to be doing the exact same thing all over again, but this time I want her disappearing, right in front of the audience's eyes, and they can get the picture and feel the feelings of, oh wow, now he's doing all the same thing that he used to do, because that's real life. You go to a place where perhaps you used to go with your person, who's no longer your person, and it brings you back to that, that memory of, oh my gosh, I used to go to this place with this person, or this is where such and such happened, or, all of those different reminiscing moments. So, shout out to Beyond Film and Photography for all your hard work and for sticking it out with me and going back and forth with me and doing all the revisions and the edits. And, I'm really happy, and I think a lot of people have heard a lot of great feedback about the video and the entire vibe of the whole thing. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. Who's a dream artist that you'd love to collaborate with?
Ooh, a dream artist that I'd love to collaborate with. I would love to do something with Anderson .Paak, because we have that same type of singer-drummer thing going on there. I'd love to do something with Bruno Mars. I don't know how many artists I can pick. I'd love to do something with Stevie Wonder, somebody who's a little more Canadian local, Jesse Reyes. Yeah, I think I have a laundry list. So
yeah.
I'll stop there.
Okay.
definitely those are some of the people who are on my hit list.
For sure, yeah. Who's a local artist that you'd love to collaborate with?
A local artist I'd love to collaborate with. Local to Hamilton, specifically?
Hamilton, Toronto, GTHA, sort of area. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of an artist who, she's local, definitely rising and rising very fast, and it's Mariah Mighty. She's a rapper.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely love to collaborate with her, and I definitely have some collaborations, even more local, coming up. We haven't planned it out yet, but we definitely spoke about it, and it's going to be done in the very near future. So Juliana and I will actually do something more featured rather than just her on background vocals. We'd love to do, some type of duet or something like that. And definitely got to collaborate with some of the hip-hop artists here in the city as well. So me and my cousin have been talking recently, Junior Depp, so we're going to figure something out and put it to pen and, you know, come up with something very soon for you guys.
Well, that's exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks.
Yeah. So you're also a public speaker. Do you want to tell me a little bit about what you speak about and what that's like?
Yeah, so my main message has been over the past few years that you are a product of a mindset rather than an environment. And the public speaking part came through from, I love motivating people. I love inspiring people. I love uplifting people. So I started speaking at schools, elementary schools. The first school that I went to speak at was my own elementary school that I had attended. And I went back and I gave them that message. And, you know, a lot of kids or a lot of people who come from certain areas and are constantly told you're a product of your environment. And I just remember thinking, you know, the environment that I grew up in, which was in the North End of Hamilton, it wasn't an environment that many people expected much to come out of, and there was always a bad rep on it, whether it came down to the violence or the drugs or the different things that were in those environments. I remember thinking to myself, you know, I didn't grow up to be a product of my environment, and definitely you are a product of your environment if you choose to be so, but I wanted to add a caveat to that to say, you know, more than being a product of your environment, you're a product of a mindset. Because at the same time, you have some people who come from well-off families, perhaps, or, you know, better areas or from better systems that have a lot more resources, but that still doesn't guarantee them success if they don't choose, you know, to follow the advice or the paths that have been set in front of them or that have been placed in front of them. So I think it definitely is a mindset thing, but more than an environment thing, and your environment definitely has some influences on your mindset, but you can override certain things by having a strong will, determination, and just, you know, change the mindset or have control over those mindsets to be able to provide different outcomes if you don't like the present outcomes that you currently have in your life.
Mm-hmm. What would be your biggest advice for somebody looking to change their mindset around that?
I think my biggest advice would definitely be understanding that you can change your mindset. Understanding that the brain is malleable. It can grow and it can change, and you can reroute, you know, your brainwaves to be able to learn new things and do things differently and think differently. And it's definitely a practice. It's a subscription service. It's not something that you're just going to, you know, program one time and you're going to get it tomorrow. It's going to be something that you constantly have to reprogram and subscribe to each and every single day. And, you know, start to train your mind to start to think differently and see differently, and how you speak. Perhaps you need to speak differently and catch yourself in the moment of when you are reverting to those old mindsets or those mindsets that no longer serve you. So my biggest advice would be just believing and understanding that you do have the ability, each and every single one of us have the ability to be able to change those mindsets, and starting to choose the ones that serve you rather than the ones that don't serve you or the ones that kind of keep you in a place that you don't really want to be in or you know, you don't like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you're also a wellness connector at Refuge Hamilton. When did you start working there, and what is your role within the organization?
Yeah, at the beginning of this year, I got a call that there was an opportunity of a job available to connect Black youth and racialized youth to health services that were in the city. We were focusing on some of the mental health services, but really we were just kind of focusing on how can we connect youth with the different resources and services that were locally here in Hamilton. It was such a difficult year for everyone. It's been a difficult, basically, year and a half for, you know, everyone. But definitely, and especially with our youth, the studies show that the depression rates, the suicide rates have been through the roof. And for, you know, the racialized population here in Hamilton and the Black community here in Hamilton,
the studies showed how COVID had disproportionately affected those communities. So this program that was put in place and the position that I was in along with my partner, Ashley, we were there in the schools, both in the at Cathedral and Bernie Custis, as another support system, as a connector to connect youth to the resources that, one, they may not know about, or two, they may feel intimidated or just perhaps not too sure how to access these different resources that were available to them. We were that bridge. We were the bridge to the gap, if there were any gaps.
Mm-hmm. This question might be obvious because it's such a vital and important organization that's doing such incredible work. But why did you decide to accept that position as opposed to, you know, any other job?
Yeah, I just definitely thought that I could make an impact, and I could, I think that's the main thing. I definitely thought that I could make an impact through this position and through this job. And like you said, it's just a vital and important position and a vital, important work that they're doing. So if I could play a role in that, and if, you know, I could do a small little tiny part, I definitely was all in to play that role and to play that part and to help these youth, connecting them to the resources that could help them, you know, exponentially during a time like this, especially. So, definitely. I just felt like I could make an impact and help.
Yeah. Have you always felt passionate for, like, social work and community support?
I definitely have always been in supporting the community and serving in the community. I think those values were definitely instilled into me through my older brother, who is, even though she's a barber, she's definitely a official, unofficial community advocate and just all around community champion for especially the neighborhood that he's in, which is in Ward 3 of the city. So that has been passed down to me. I used to volunteer with him a lot with the many different initiatives that he would do in the city. So I think it's definitely in the blood at this moment and at this time, and whether it's through music or whether it's through, you know, the health networks and these different things, I'm definitely a advocate for supporting community, or whether it's through the foundation, my student foundation, whatever it is. I'm definitely all about supporting the community.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember if you mentioned it earlier, but what's the name of your brother's shop? Because we should definitely plug that.
Yeah, so his shop is called Ontario Barber Association, located on Main and Wentworth, right on the corner of Main and Wentworth.
Awesome. Well, if anybody needs a haircut, you guys should stop down there.
Yeah, I think barbershops are open again. So
yeah, yeah. I'm getting a haircut for the first time since, like, the last quarantine lift tomorrow. So I'm so excited.
Yeah, I definitely became a self-barber. Obviously, I haven't cut my hair. My real, like, my hair on top of my head.
Yeah.
Probably, like, the last 9-10 years. But yeah. I had to do some beard work. So I definitely became a personal barber. And I was like, hey, you know, perhaps it's running the family. I'm not too shabby.
Exactly. Yeah, if you've got the talent, then go ahead.
Yeah.
One more question about your work with Refuge. What's the biggest reward so far from working with that organization?
What's the biggest reward? I think it's just definitely being part of something that was new. The position was a pilot project.
Mm-hmm.
It ended in June. Mm-hmm. And the biggest reward was just to kind of be a friend, be a big brother, be a resource during a time where I think so many youth need that support. So I definitely think being able to connect, it was difficult to be able to connect because of just all the changes, right? You know, we're in the schools and then schools are closed and then they're open again for a little bit and they're closed again. So it was a lot of that and just trying to figure out how to navigate, I think, as everybody was, teachers included and, you know, schools included, just trying to figure out how to navigate
with youth, you know, who are disconnected. So the biggest reward so far was just being able to play a small role in helping to reconnect youth and to connect them to the right resources. And, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully we'll be able to continue that work as school starts back up and things become a little bit more stable. And hopefully we'll be able to help some more young people in a more stable environment if COVID behaves itself, you know, and we're able to get better as an entire society, you know.
Definitely, yeah. What can we look forward to seeing from you?
Definitely look out for the full EP project. The Housewarming Party is what I call it. I named it that because I want you to imagine if you were to come over to my house for the first time and I invited you over to my housewarming party, the type of sounds that you would perhaps hear at my housewarming party. So the rest of the songs on the project are reflective of that. That's going to be dropping late August. So definitely look out for that. And there's also some performances coming up. They haven't announced them, so I don't know if I'm allowed to announce them, but definitely look out for some performances that will be coming up. When they announce them, make sure that you get the first scoop, Sarah, so that you can tell all the listeners to look out for it. But definitely there's some performances coming up end of August. One is coming up for sure. There's some stuff coming out in September. A lot of stuff. I know I'm talking in incognito. But definitely look out for performances. Definitely look out for a new project, a full EP coming late August for sure. And more music in the future.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, definitely keep me updated. I will definitely let everyone know what's coming out. Yeah,
and thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, very excited. So everyone listening, you can find Lucky Sticks, and again, that is Sticks with a Z at the end, not an S, on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, and all streaming services under himself. And to wrap things up, I've got a throwback Lucky Sticks track for you. Magic is a single from 2017 about the fear of heartbreak when potentially entering a new relationship.
Hey, it's your boy Lucky Sticks, and you are listening to Hot Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.
You know we've been going round and round, and we've had our ups and downs. Oh baby,
oh, oh baby,
picturing you with another man is a sight that I can't stand. No baby,
no baby,
no, I'm not perfect, I do what I can. You make me wanna be a better man. I'm under construction, girl, please understand. Be patient. I don't wanna put pressure on you or rush into this too soon. No, baby.
No, baby. No, baby.
I said yeah, she said no. She said maybe, I said so. Could it be? I don't know. Is this real or for sure? I said yeah, she said no. She said maybe, I said so. Could it be? I don't know. Girl, I wanna know
if I gave you my heart.
Everything would be alright. You make me feel like magic. Ever since you walked into my life, I'm addicted to your vibe. Oh baby,
oh baby.
That's why I've been spending all my time. One day hope you'll be my wife. Yeah baby,
yeah baby.
I said yeah, she